Hello, everyone, and thank you for tuning into the Misericordia University Alumni Podcast. I am your host, Class of 2017 and 2019 alumnus, Mike Gambita. Today on the show, we are featuring a postcard profile. This 2013 alumna is managing future SLPs and is currently using teletherapy to give a voice to the voiceless. Ladies and gentlemen, an alumni of Misericordia, please welcome Kirsten Healy to the show. Kirsten, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
So happy to have you on the show today. We're just going to jump right into it. Kirsten, what have you been up to since you graduated from Misericordia?
So I graduated from Misericordia in 2013, and it's now 2020. So in the past 7 years, I've done a lot. I've grown a lot professionally and personally. In terms of speech pathology, I have worked in a bunch of settings since graduating. I did what is called a clinical fellowship year, where I have to work 9 months in order to get my state licensure and my national licensure.
Is that where you earn your C's?
Yes, oh, very good.
I know what
very
I'm talking good. About.
Very good. So, yep, and the C's are the Certificate of Clinical Competence, which is what you need to virtually get any position in the United States anyway. So I did my CFY in a nursing home, which was not my favorite setting, but it was the best learning experience for that time because, you know, during that time, you've already graduated. It's like your first job, but there is a supervisor who checks in every 3 months, essentially, but they should kind of check in daily. And I had a great supervisor that really taught me how to understand like the medical billing system, kind of like the healthcare system in America, just like what are we able to target in this setting and what will be kind of covered by insurance, because that is something that you don't necessarily learn in school, right? You learn all the tools of how to be a speech pathologist, but once you get out is when you start learning more of the fine tunings of things and how you fit in that. From there, I started working in home health, which is what I still do. It is my favorite setting. I love being with families. I love being in people's homes, strangely, you know, just like kicking back on the couch. And I definitely am the type of person that could feel comfortable in someone's home. I have a lot of friends and colleagues that are like, how do you do that? How do you go into people's houses and just like set up shop? And like I said, I really do enjoy it because it's so functional. It's where they are a majority of the time. It's who they're with a majority of the time. I have a lot of patients that are now friends. I have a lot of patients, you know, that have sadly moved on and their families are so grateful and I still keep in touch. I've had a lot of loves come from home health. My last two kind of more important settings as well is what I'm currently doing now, which before COVID, the pandemic, I was already doing teletherapy since October. I service a brick and mortar school in Connecticut. So I have to have my Pennsylvania license for speech and my Connecticut license for speech. And I see kids over the computer, which is virtually what everyone has been doing, including us. And I loved it because I was able to work from home. I was able to just focus on the bread and butter, quote unquote, of speech therapy, which is just, you know, getting the student in the chair, having goals you're going to work on, having activities to work on. And beneficially enough, the students, we also call them scholars. So the scholars, they love technology, right? These are kids that like grew up knowing how to swipe an iPhone at, you know, 18 months. So they are more engaged and more successful in a lot of tasks that I would do in person. So I love that aspect of it. And it just has really given me a lot of independence, which is exactly what I wanted with my degree, was to have just the independence to be able to make the judgment calls and the clinical calls that I'm able to do that I know that I can make work for a specific client. My last other favorite position, I wear many hats. In speech therapy, you are kind of forced to learn how to wear many hats, and I just always want to do everything at the same time, so I try my best. Sometimes it's too much, but without further ado, my last position that I also still do is supervision for university clinics. So when I was in graduate school, I loved diagnostics, which is evaluating clients. And, you know, that's usually the course that not many students like. It's kind of stressful. You have to really prep to give one test. But I remember my supervisors I had then, who are now my colleagues, saying, "So weird that Kirsten loves diagnostics." Well, I also love the university setting. You know, I loved being in that atmosphere, having just resources, a room full of resources, you know, in terms of paperback books, you know, rooms full of resources in terms of like professors and supervisors. So I wanted to be like them. So as soon as I graduated, I asked Dr. Tellis, who is our department chair, I was like, "Hey, I want to come back. I've graduated, but I want to come back." And he's like, "In 9 months, you can come back to supervise." So as soon as I was able to, I emailed him and I was like, "Hey, got that license." And so I've been like grateful to be able to supervise graduate clinic, undergraduate clinic. It also allowed me to teach as an adjunct some undergraduate classes, which has been really fun and great for me as a growing professional, because it's so important to have, you know, your hands in the clinical work as well as teaching the students, because you're literally translating them to them. You are translating to them the skills that you use daily that they can then use. And it's just so nice to have those stories and that, you know, nervousness that they feel as well. It's a great learning tool for me and a great teaching tool for me as well. Keeps me up on my content knowledge as well. So I've done a lot, but like I said, I always am trying to push the boundaries a little bit. Right now in my teletherapy practice, all of my scholars are first generation students, and a lot of them are from non-English speaking countries. So it really makes me feel more empowered than I otherwise would have, because I'm helping, you know, students and scholars and kids that might not otherwise have access to resources such as what we do in speech therapy, etc. So I'm just really grateful to help them be the best versions of themselves, you know. And I'm also a type of speech therapist that when we play games, right, I don't always let the student win.
Never do that. It's competition.
Yeah, I always say it too. And I'm always like, you know, I do not let you win. And I did not let you win on that one. But my kids, man, they've gotten really good at tic-tac-toe. They've gotten really good at hangman. And you know, but it's also that kind of just like real world, real life, like you're going to lose, you know, sometimes. And it's okay if you walk away from the computer, but just come back. So I feel like I've gotten a lot more like awareness working with this type of population, and a lot more empathy working with this population, and a lot more understanding. And especially now being able to, you know, provide speech therapy in their homes, I'm able to see, you know what I mean, and chat with their parents, which is something I normally wouldn't be able to do under, you know, regular circumstances. So even despite what's going on and having continuing teletherapy, I'm still learning and trying to understand, especially when you kind of see the students' home lives.
Sure. You know? Yeah. I certainly want to get into some of the aspects, especially in the situation that we're currently in. But what I really want to know, Kirsten, is when I think of speech language pathology, I honestly never heard about it until I came into Misericordia my first year. And when I talk to some individuals, there's always either an influence of a family member, or there's, you know, a family member that currently is an SLP. Kind of talk to me how you got interested in speech language pathology and how it led you to those 7 years of success that you're currently having.
So my story is pretty atypical. And this is where I will always be forever grateful to Misericordia, especially Dr. Glenn Tellis. So initially as a senior in high school, same, had no idea what speech was. Like, I went to a very, small private elementary school and high school. You know, some kids would be pulled to the speech trailer, as they called it. And of course, everyone wanted to go. You get the stickers on the folder. How cool is that?
Absolutely.
But, you know, it was never like what I see now in a school as, you know, services. So I never had a lot of experience. I always knew my one aunt was a teacher. You know, that's what we called her, a teacher. And so whatever, I, you know, was influenced by a couple different things to go into pharmacy, which was not a good decision because I hate math. I don't like chemistry. So I was like, yeah, I don't know. This just isn't for me. And I actually was at Temple University, so I was not even at Misericordia.
Okay.
So halfway through, I was like, yeah, this is not for me. Kind of told my family, like, it's not for me. And they were very supportive. You know, whatever you want to do, you're the one who will be doing the position. So I'm also grateful to have a support system in that way. I know some students struggle with that sometimes, changing majors and et cetera. So I had my aunt, like I said, was a teacher, and I was looking through, you know, just blindly looking through majors, like, what do I like? What, you know, what could I do? And I came across speech pathology, and I was like, I love chatting. I could chat. I like listening. I could listen. Like, you know, looked through some courses. I was like, this sounds kind of cool. And so when I told my family, I was like, hey, like, I think I like speech, and I think I might try to get into a program that would allow me to get my bachelor's and my master's degree in a shorter time span. And you know, then everyone was like, oh my gosh, your aunt is a speech therapist. And I was like, what? I didn't know, you know, like, you know, when you're a kid and they talk about work, like, I probably sound like a teacher when I'm, you know, talking to people peripherally. But so I called her up and I was like, hey, I think I'm going to do speech. And at the time she was working at a public school district, which has great benefits and great, you know, programs for speech pathology year round. Also in the summer, if you wanted summer work. So she's like, do it. You'll love it. So I was like, okay, I got to scoot home because I want to go to a 5-year program. If I'm going to do it, you know, I love school. I'll dive in. I'll make the 5-year commitment. So I had applied to another university, and because I was in pharmacy, and like I said, it's not only that I did not like math, but I also was not good at math and I was not good at chemistry. Like, it just wasn't the way my brain, you know, worked. So my GPA was not the best. And as a transfer, getting into a 5-year program, that's hard. That's very hard. I see what the kids go through now. You know, I'm a kid still, but the kids, you
we're
know?
All kids. We're all kids at heart.
Yeah, we're all kids, us kids. So I see what, you know, the students have to go through to get into programs, into master's programs, GREs and letters of recommendation. And so I was like, yeah, I'm going to try, you know, to get in. I applied to a local university who also had another 5-year. I did not get in. So I was like, oh my gosh, I don't even really have a plan B. I don't really have a plan B. So I didn't finish my Misericordia application. I don't know why. So I hustled back online. I emailed, Joan was her first name. She was in the transfer office.
Okay.
Joan was another amazing woman who, heard me out, heard my story. Like, my GPA is not that great. I'm willing to work. I'm a good student, you know, take your chance on me. And she was like, okay. So I told her, I'm going to finish my application and send it in. You let me know what I need to do. So I send in the application. I meet with her in person. I remember being really sweaty, and it was summer, and I was really nervous. And I felt like this was the meeting that had what I would do for the rest of my life. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. was in Joan's hands. So, you know, I go in trying to be like super sweet and super, you know, which is easy when you're chatting with really anyone at Misericordia. but in general, like, she was just so approachable. So she sat down with me. She was like, I think Dr. Tellis will let you take a class or two, see how you do and let you in the program. So I was like, thank you so much. Thank you so much. I email Dr. Tellis. I go to meet with him, which at the time is not down the street on Lake Street. It was up the steps in Mercy.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, whew, really sweating going up those steps, man. Third floor, I think. Second floor, still felt like the third. The rough walk, rough steps. So I go up there, and, you know, he just starts firing questions at me. You know, like, do you like working with kids? Are you creative? Do you like working with adults? What would you do in this situation? And I was like, oh my gosh, I have no background knowledge. And he goes, you're in. And I was like, sweating. So I was like, all right, like I always take school seriously, but when I felt like I didn't have, like I almost didn't have the chance, I took it so seriously when I was given the chance that I did everything once I was in Misericordia. So I get in the program and I, you know, just fall in love with the coursework. I fall in love with the idea that clinic is down the hall from your coursework. I fall in love with like the stories that the professors are telling. And it's the first time that I'm like, wow, I'm where I belong. You know, like I love school. This is great. And so, like I said, I felt like everyone else in the class. So I was started in the fall of 2009, which prompted me to be a sophomore. I did have to take some summer classes to catch up, but I was like, oh man, like these kids, my classmates have had like a whole extra year here. Like I gotta like make myself known. Like I want to do stuff. So, you know, I tried to be involved in class. I definitely got more outgoing going to Misericordia, especially being with the same group of students, which is great. But I would answer a lot of questions. I had a lot of questions. I now have students that are a mini Kirsten, and I'm like, I vibe with you. I know where you're coming from. Keep it coming. Like, I'm here for it to support you. And so I started getting really involved in research. I wanted to take on more like clients. You know, I just wanted more because I felt like I lost a year of being in this program and in this family. And you were only given those 5 years. And I mean, they're always your family, but you're only given the 5 years physically in those hallways, you know? So I only had four, but it was amazing. So anyway, I did a lot of research. I was supported a lot by a lot of the professors to, you know, like push forward, like continue on. I'm not going to say I won't get a PhD. I think that's probably where I'm headed eventually. There's definitely a lot more groundwork that I want to do as like an active clinician, especially now considering the circumstances, considering how much I love my teletherapy kids. But eventually I think that, you know, it would be cool to kind of push myself all the way and just fully explore speech, because it really has been such a lifeline for me. And it's, like I said, Joan, man, she could have just told Dr. Tellis, you know, I have this prospective student, but she pushed me through and I'm so grateful. And it's really, it totally changed the trajectory of my life at that time, especially. Sometimes I think back and I'm like, oh man, what if I didn't go to Misericordia? What if I didn't do speech? Like, who would I be? Who would I be? That's... I mean, I'd still be doing something along like, you know, like public service or like working with others. But man, the fact that I could just like chit chat and, you know, meet people and hear stories. That's the best part, is hearing stories.
Yeah. No, I think it's funny when you're talking about those clinics. So a little two sidebars here. So number one, it actually dawned on me that you're actually our first podcast guest and I'll probably get the, you know, the angry text being like, I was the one, but you're actually one of our first alumni guests that currently is still involved with the institution. So congratulations on that. So that came to me automatically, but you were talking about the clinic spaces. What I know so fondly is that second floor, my office is one of the supervisor / parent spaces that was a part of the second floor Mercy Hall.
That is so funny.
Yeah. So when you were talking about it, I was like, I'm in one of those offices. Like that's like me right there. So, you know, it's so funny how those two connect. But Kirsten, for, you know, kind of moving into what your current role is, you know, you are doing teletherapy. I don't want to say on the side, but you are doing it technically in hand with you supervising some future SLPs at Misericordia. I understand, of course, We're still in the mode of quarantine recording here, but for some of our students that are currently, as they are, fifth years right now, fourth year, fifth year, they're in that little transition here over the summer. Originally, they were actually supposed to be doing on-site clinicals. They were supposed to be doing in-person clinical, and they kind of got that almost a pivot or a complete 360 or 720, depending on how you consider it, that they had to do simu cases now and had to do teletherapy. I know for you, Kirsten, you seem very well obtained and competent in the fact of those teletherapy guidelines and, you know, some things. So you kind of have the upper hand on that. But I think you've been serving as a great mentor, which is something you've been wanting to do, especially during this time. Kind of talk to me about how your current students that you're supervising right now kind of go through as far as like, what are they going through? What are they experiencing right now? And what are some of the things that they're going to take with them for the rest of their life in this situation?
It's so crazy that you ask that, because I never would have thought about teletherapy as clinic. ASHA, which is our governing body, they're okay with teletherapy, but I think this is really going to like thwart like students' need experience at least one semester. Like, that's what I really hope comes out of this, like overall, because I truly think every student graduating should have a little bit of teletherapy under your belt. And it's not that different. I mean, it is different in terms of the delivery, but the main skill is the same. But that's what makes it difficult. And that's what is probably the most difficult for the students. And that's what was most difficult for me. And that was the great aspect of getting the call of, hey, can you start next week to do clinic? Because we need to be online. And I was like, oh my gosh, yeah. I've been doing it for like a little while, and I know what they're going to be nervous with. I know where the breakdowns might be. So I think for the students, it's such an amazing learning process and platform. I feel like as a supervisor, I'm learning from them, because we all are taking resources from different places. They've taught me a lot about how they organize for their sessions, how they make their sessions engaging for younger students and clients. A lot of times when we meet at the end of the week after clinic, I tell them like, hey, I loved how you used that PowerPoint. I'm 100% going to steal it, and I'm giving you the credit, you know? But I think they also are learning a lot of interpersonal skills with parents, which is not that you don't chat with them after a session, but it's different when you're in their home, and it's different when you're in a client's home, a la home health. So teletherapy, it's kind of translated okay for me. Mm-hmm. But that was a big difference for the students, I think, you know, kind of feeling like a stranger in someone's home. Because, you know, clinic is only so long, and you have to gain rapport and you have to make progress. So the students have really been challenged to increase their clinical judgment, increase kind of like their like counseling and empathetic type skills, because we are going through something that a lot of these young kids haven't gone through. I've never gone through, you've never gone through. So these are kids that haven't seen their friends and whatnot. And these students are able to kind of make it engaging and social in that way. And I think that having the skills of translating, you know, you can't read a room as well when you're on Zoom. It's a lot more difficult to keep a child in a chair. So they're learning ways to be more interactive and more engaging, to bring the student to the screen, which is not something you have to do in person. You don't have to, you know, essentially rope them in. You know, yeah, you need their attention, but when they're on Zoom, it's a little bit different. You need their visual attention, their auditory attention, their sustained attention. But I think that it's just such a good opportunity for them to also get such one-on-one supervision, because through our organization, they prefer that we have 100% supervision while we're doing teletherapy, because it is very new. Obviously, it's new for the students. There's nothing for them to even base it off of. So kudos to them for doing such a great job, never having done it before, you know, never seeing it done before. So I'm excited for them. And I told them that at the beginning, I was like, I'm so excited for you guys. I know you guys are definitely nervous and you're scared, but I'm so excited for you because I feel like it reinvigorated speech therapy for me because, like I said, it's getting down to like the business of speech therapy, not so much, you know, is this covered by insurance? Yes or no, which is something you have to deal with in outpatient or, you know, there's time to make up sessions with teletherapy because it is so flexible. So I hope that the students are getting a good experience because I know I am. I'm way more connected to the student. I'm way more connected to the client. I feel like the type of attention I'm able to provide is so one-on-one that I see the student clinician and the client doing better every week, progressing every week, which is great to see as a clinician and as a supervisor. So truly, this is like
the best of both worlds.
Oh my gosh.
Put a little hand in Montana.
Yeah. And like, I don't want to be too forward with Dr. Tellis, but I was like, hey, like we should always have like a little teletherapy optional clinic. I'm here to supervise, you know what I mean? Even if it doesn't become something that is always part of like the program, I think it should be a cool optional thing because it's going to just become, if it wasn't already going to become bigger, it's been forced to kind of blow up now. And that's really cool for me because it's just more opportunities, more clients, and it's cool for them too if they enjoy teletherapy.
Absolutely. Well, I think you bring that positive outlook as far as, you know, you're not only getting the objectives and the accomplishments from the student, but you're also getting that same almost like cross learning between each other. Like you're not necessarily mm-hmm. telling them, hey, you need to do this, you need to do that. You're actually learning from them and you're saying like, I'm going to steal that, but I'll give you credit for it. So
yeah. Yeah. And I'm honest, you know, and that's what's great about supervising and continuing to do clinical work is that like, I am excited about the tasks. I'm like, wow, I would never think of that ever.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. You know, and everyone's so creative in a different way. So it's just been a great overall learning experience. Using Adobe to sign stuff, what is that? I've had to learn that. So
you learn something new every day, Kirsten. So
I love it.
But you know, Kirsten, I know you're still well involved in Misericordia. You're still participating with some of your future SLPs to be and all these things as far as being on campus or as far as viewing the current student in Misericordia. But what I want to ask you, Kirsten, is, and you kind of touched briefly upon it, is how has Misericordia helped you get to where you are today?
Ooh, that is a big question.
It's the million-dollar question, but we don't give out any $1 million here, so.
That's okay. So I think truly the biggest thing is confidence. I got a lot of confidence from Misericordia. I graduated, you know, having understood everything I learned, having passed all the courses, having passed all the state exams, whatnot. But definitely the confidence that I came out with to be like, hey, there are a variety of settings and I honestly feel like I could go into any of them, which I know not everyone feels that way. And I feel like I'm very versatile in that way too. Like I could do home health and then I can switch the next hour and do teletherapy with a student who's, you know, in elementary school. And, you know, I can then chat with a graduate student at Misericordia. It, like I said, it kind of goes along with wearing many hats. But I also love that too. I love having my hand in a little bit of everything to also see how they all come together because everything is related at the end. So definitely the confidence and also just determining my own value as a professional, not selling myself short, giving myself the ability to learn if I'm not sure of something. Even professors that I've had that are now colleagues that I still go to for assistance, you know, even as a student, they would say, if you have a question and I can't answer it, I will get you the answer. And I try to also carry that out as well, because we don't know everything. I didn't leave Misericordia knowing everything about speech pathology. I left Misericordia knowing enough about speech pathology to start running in any setting. But I really do love how speech pathology and Misericordia also instilled just like the lifelong learning of it. With speech pathology, we have to get CEUs every year, every 2 years, every 3 years. So having that continued motivation as an adult when you're doing all these other things and juggling other responsibilities, for me anyway, you know, I like that, that I still have that motivation to learn after going to college and getting a master's degree. Usually people are just done and they're done and they're done. And I'm just like, I'll write a paper, you know, I'll correct a paper, you know? The other thing how Misericordia has helped, and I know I keep bringing it up, but Dr. Tellis is actually the person who thought of me when this home health company called him and was like, hey, we're looking for, you know, an alumni or a graduate student who's going to be graduating. We're looking for a home health speech therapist, and, you know, they have to be willing to travel, etc. And he was like, I know exactly the person that will do that. And that was me. And it still is me. And I'm so grateful that it's still me, because again, that's like one of my other favorite settings. So it's just great that someone who like helped kind of like shape my mind thought of me like a year out of school and was like, hey, I know a person that will fit this position. And it fits so well that I'm still there. It's my longest setting that I've been in, the longest position I've held. So just from, you know, personal like confidence and value to having like the base skill knowledge to also being provided with job opportunities. I mean, I've talked to a lot of people. I know a lot of different speech pathologists from different programs. I've gone to a lot of ASHA conventions and PISHA conventions because of Misericordia. So I've been able to meet and network, and I never really hear a story like mine. I hear a lot of, you know, like, I just couldn't wait to get out, things like that. And I'm just like, really? Because I would go back. You know, I would definitely go back, and I would do it the same way. I would be insanely stressed out. I would be doing research. I would be, you know, having study groups in the library. I love the library so much. And it's only gotten cooler since I graduated.
It has. It really, really has.
So I'm just grateful for, you know, so many different aspects, not even just like, oh, I got my degree. I have so many aspects of speech pathology that I still interact with daily because of Misericordia.
That's really cool. I'm so like it, you see it in you when you speak about it, and you know, it transpires, and you know, I almost said it's like, well, you transpire that to other students and you immediately pick that up and you're like, I try my best to do so. And I really think that is a big help to students, especially during this time, because so many students are so stressed about certain, you know, grade requirements and, you know, getting things mm-hmm. turned on time and all these things. And I think just having the support that you have said so many times, that support that allows individuals to be brought up and to be able to be these, whether it's a professional or in this case, a speech mm-hmm. language pathologist, the tools and all the resources that you have are here at Misericordia. So you definitely speak volume to that, not only from the student perspective, but also from the adjunct perspective as being a part of Misericordia. So I you know, give kudos to you for that. But Kirsten, I know we're talking about alumni and we're talking about friends, but has there been anybody that you've been in touch with? I'm hoping you're doing Zoom calls and what do you call it? Quiplash times nights. I'm sure you zoomed out after all these teletherapy sessions, but I'm sure you've been in touch with some alumni.
That's funny. Yeah, I honestly, after being on Zoom all day, it's really the last thing that I want to do. And I'm also a video gamer, and it's hard because I'm like, do I want to play the video game? Yes, but I've been on the computer all day. My eyes, I don't have a window in this my little office right now. So
are you console console gamer or computer PC?
PC and console. Both, I'm just getting into PC gaming.
Okay.
I'm a Switch gal, Nintendo.
Same here, girl.
I knew we'd get along. So when I'm not in speech, I'm Animal Crossing. You know, digging up bells,
fishing,
planting flowers. Yeah, running a town. When I'm not doing speech therapy, I'm running a town.
You're not only running, you're not only running clinicians, but you're also running a town in the video game world. So.
Yes, exactly. That's amazing. It helps with the supervisor skills, you know.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. That's cool. So
have I been in touch? Yes. It's funny. Like I said earlier, you're kind of with the same crew in, or cohort, I guess is a more professional term. But crew. We had a crew rolling. And we had like a very diverse class, right? There was students like me who entered a little bit later. We also had some transfer students that just came in for the master's program. But when you are together for an experience like that, which is kind of an intensive time, I feel for the students because I felt this. And that's another reason why everything, like I said, is related. Like, I've gone through the program. I know how you guys feel at this time. This is so different, but I'm here because I understand all your other kinds of responsibilities. But when you're going through this program, you know, when you are in the most stressful year, which is the fourth year, it's the first year of graduate school. It's the first year you're seeing real live clients, not just hearing about them in class, not just watching them on TV. You're interacting and you need to plan and you're the one that's responsible. When you have other friends that are in bachelor programs that are graduating, your first graduate year is their senior year. So you're really stressed out on different levels. I remember feeling that a lot. So your people are your people in the cohort. So that was the year that I think we all were like, hey, we only have each other. Our parents do not get this. Our other friends who are not in speech do not get this. They don't know what we're transcribing. They don't know that we're sweating, like writing up a soap note. So you have each other. You're each other's confidants for a year. And then into the final year, because you're out working, again, no one understands that aspect, that feeling, you know, at that time. So it feels so validating to be in a cohort of people that is small. So it's not 300 of us. I think it was like 32. That was small. And, you know, we've all had the same seats for 4 years, sat in the same seat. You know, we all had our seats. So some of, you know, my friends in our cohort are now my colleagues. And you, especially in this time, we're sharing materials, we're sharing ideas, we're complaining together because, again, your parents don't understand it. Your other friends don't understand it. You need to have, you know, like it's so important to have, it's important to have people that are outside of it as well, especially during that stressful time, for as difficult as it is for other people to understand. It is nice to hang out with someone who is so unrelated to speech too. Yeah, like I said, a lot of, you know, the jobs that I've come across, like I've pushed to colleagues, but like other classmates of mine, you know, hit them up for, yeah, have you heard anything about this position? Or I heard, you know, do you want to take some CEUs together? Want to go to Asha together? If it's in Florida, we'll go to Disney. Okay.
Yeah. That's a good deal.
Right. So, I'm close with like probably a quarter of the people that I've graduated with. And, cool. You know, after 7 years and kind of like switching, you know, like people getting married and moving and getting jobs, it's hard to keep that. But there are definitely a handful that I chat with every so often. And it's nice to, when we do have Asha conventions and, you know, we all end up going or we don't know each other's going and you end up seeing each other and you're like, oh, my gosh, and you just hang out all day instead of going to Asha. I'm just kidding. You still go to Asha with your
then
friends.
Then you get the drink tickets and then you get the hors d'oeuvres and then, like, you know, don't worry. We all know how that goes, Kirsten.
Yeah. There was a CEU there was a CEU course somewhere, but we must have missed it.
Just a little. No, but that's, you know, you get the Facebook groups and you get the text chains going put together. So it's, you know, certainly great to hear that you're keeping in touch with some of your alum. But Kirsten, we're just about to wrap up. Any final thoughts or words for this podcast?
Oh, man.
It's just a trip down memory lane, right?
Yeah, I know. I have a lot. Yeah, like my brain is going in a bunch of different directions. I guess the biggest thing is be yourself, you know, find what makes you happy in that way. I know that sounds very cliche, find what makes you happy, but truly, if you're sitting in a class or you've observed the position of the job you're going to be doing in a couple of years, and it's not making you psyched and excited and asking questions, that's okay. You're still learning, but if it's not making you super excited, you know, do what makes you excited, and just be yourself. I think that's the biggest thing that I've learned as a speech pathologist is, you know, I do feel and find comfort talking to people, and they feel and find comfort talking to me. And if I put up this, you know, I always tell the students, you don't have to put up a clipboard wall, you know, they're not going to bite you. They're just humans, and they want to be talked to as humans just as much as you want to be talked to as a human. So just be real and just be transparent. There's definitely a way to be real and professional, and I feel like somehow I balance it. Sometimes it's tricky, but I do try to keep that in mind all the time, that these are just humans, you know, people like my siblings or my parents or my grandparents, that are just trying to, you know, continue to live independently. So we don't have to be afraid of them. You know, let's just be, you know, the best versions of ourselves to help them be the best versions of themselves, if that makes sense. So be yourself, find what makes you tick, and always keep in touch with your classmates.
Yeah. TikTok ready to rock and get everybody together for those drink tickets at Asha or Pisha, depending on where you go. So
hey, I'll go to both if there's going to be a hang.
That's a hangout. So well, Kirsten, thank you so much for you know, teletherapy. Well, actually teleconferencing again, and you know, good luck with everything for the rest of the time that teletherapy is a thing.
Thanks. Hopefully forever, and you're my last Zoom appointment of the day.
Thanks.